This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The hours that many of us are spending alone, physically distanced, can be made so much more manageable in the presence of good books, taking us to other places and showing us new things. We've been spending time with some of our favorite poets, including Nandi Comer. A Detroit native and a recipient of a Kresge Fellowship, she has a new collection publishing next month called Tapping Out. In it, Comer explores the way that other cultures sometimes give us new perspectives on our own. The poems are an immersion in lucha libre, the Mexican wrestling tradition that's one part soap opera, one part performance art, one part athletic achievement, and all spectacle.
Aquí tenemos a todos estos protagonistas luchísticos. Cada quien como en el baile ha tomado a su pareja. El hijo del perro Aguayo ya empieza a carburar con esos golpazos.
Even if your Spanish is non-existent, you get the drift of the two masked teams going at each other, spilling out over the sides of the ring. I'll just say then, Nandi Comer, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
It was awesome to have you. Is there a point at which writing became for you as much about inquiry as it was about self-expression?
Well, I should say that part of my philosophy around writing is not necessarily wanting to say all the answers. So it's been a process of asking questions and thinking about language and experiences as kind of a puzzle, and how is the best, most efficient way with language of expressing that. And so it's always been a point of inquiry where whether I'm telling a story, the work behind it is really like, is this the way that actually do it? Is it precisely the way that I can see it happening? Maybe I need to put it away. Maybe I'm not asking the right questions yet. Maybe I need to ask different kinds of questions. But even some of my favorite poems, in the middle of trying to answer, will just say a question, will just allow yourself to be in the unknown and ask.
The new collection has a lot of visceral experience, and aside from all your the sort of intellectual walk that you're taking us through this world, there's a poem called Lucha de Apuesta, How Not to Lose the Mask, that gives us a flavor of some of what you've been drawing on. Could you read it for us?
Yeah, sure. How Not to Lose the Mask, Lucha de Apuesta, for Pedro Aguayo Jr., 1979 to 2015. The bet was mask for mask. The loser risked his hair. Now the winning fighter wields the winning razor in his right hand, a tuft of the sorry sap's locks in his left. I'll bet my money for your car, his house for your dressing room. She who loses will work as a servant for the champion, drowning for electric shock. And when there's nothing on the line, everything's on the line. His elbow's last lace of cartilage will give. One too many hits might shatter her knee. Most lucky wrestlers will lose mobility in two places, while the unlucky, three broken vertebrae, his last breath slipping from his chest. If I don't take you down, you may win my wife, or my first son, my blood, my ears, air. But you will lose memories, your grandmother's face, how to tie a knot, the digits of your address, how to win at risking. What do we win? A wandering walk in a new suburb, naming all familiar and foggy things.
Thank you for that. There's two things just that come right out of the gate on that particular poem. First, the anything can happen and everything usually does atmosphere in the ring. Mm. Is that what drew you to Lucha Libre?
Well, I love going into the ring and going into the arena, mainly because of all the things that are happening in this, in the whole building. I have never really liked sports, I should say. And so it's actually quite remarkable that my first collection is about this athletic kind of theater that happens in the ring. But what drew me to it was all of the choreography and all of the costuming that became metaphor for all kinds of things that I was trying to explore in my writing at the time. So I was writing really, really bad poems about traveling around the world and what it meant to be Black in places where there aren't a lot of people of African descent, and how much like a spectacle, or like you end up becoming the point of attraction when you go to sites where tourists go. And so I was trying to figure out how to talk about it. And what I was producing was really, really just not very good poems. And so then I put those away and I started just writing poems like that poem. It just allowed me to like play. It allowed me to find language. And then I returned to other subject matter about being away and about being this, feeling really estranged when I was in spaces of like, especially when you're in spaces of privilege when you're being a tourist, but you're also being placed in these kind of, you're being subjected to these, to the view of others and them seeing you as such a strange thing that they've never seen.
Another thing that jumps out about that poem is the idea of this world where, in theory at least, all the storylines are sort of preordained and understood beforehand. And yet there really is a lot at stake in each match.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, when I tell them that I love wrestling and I particularly love lucha libre, they tend to give me a strong side eye about it. I think part of it, sort of like when you're playing around with poetry, you can think that you know where you're going, but then there's a lot of room for kind of playing around with the moves. Especially when you talk about the matches where they're betting certain things, it's not always determined who's going to win. So those are why those matches are actually so, there's so much at stake, because you maybe don't know the outcome. And particularly when you're talking about the person who it's dedicated to, Pedro Aguayo Jr., he lost his life in the ring. And we also just lost another wrestler, La Parca, who had also fallen in an unplanned way. So no matter how much you have planned, these athletes are really putting their bodies on the line. They are going through real injuries. They're really hurting themselves for like the entertainment of everyone in the arena. And it's lovely, but also you do kind of privately really fear for what could happen to them.
When was the first time you saw one of these matches in person?
So I lived in Guadalajara, Mexico. It's now been over 10 years. And I was kind of brought on a dare because this guy I was seeing, the guy that I was like head over heels for, he would watch it every Saturday on the TV. And I was just like, this is the stupidest thing. I don't understand why you watch this. And he was like, no, you got to go to the ring. And so he brought me out. And I, like, as soon as I walked into the building, as soon as we bought our tickets and crossed into the arena, I was just like, I wanted to go back. Like, I knew I had to go back. And so every time I actually often go back to Guadalajara, and every time I'm there, I make it to at least two or three matches.
What was it? Was it the energy in the room?
So it's not just the energy. There's something particular. For a long time, lucha libre was considered a low-class sport. So it wasn't something that, you know, the doñas or anything would go to. It was very much a space where, like, it's a kid's thing, and it's also, like, tickets can go for really cheap. Like, sometimes you can get in for one peso. But the one thing that I noticed is that you have these Olympians who are really, you know, really well-trained athletes, and they are having conversations with their audience. So you can have someone in the audience, you can have a child in the audience tell them, hit them with a chair, and that wrestler will grab the chair and hit him with the chair. And you have an older lady who, you know, I don't know how long she's been going to the matches. She'll stand up and she'll yell in his face. And I started to wonder, even within my own experience as someone who I was teaching English and oftentimes in danger of losing my job, I would go into the arena and there was this space that we could all be participatory. We could all kind of, in places, especially people who, in general, when you have lower class people who might not feel as empowered, you can go into a space and you can tell someone who has all of this power physically and culturally to do something that you say. And how remarkable is that? And I also just really, really love the snacks that get sold in the arena.
Okay, talk to me. What do you get? What do you get when you go?
I love all kinds of hot sauce, and I really love potato chips, lime, and salt drenched in hot sauce, and a big old beer. And sometimes I'll get the pork rinds, too.
Oh,
but it just depends on what arena you're in, because some arenas have different treats. So I'm talking about when I'm in Guadalajara. There's also, there's all kinds of relationships that you build, because I kind of been going my first couple of times with someone who had gone often. He knew all the photographers. There's a community there. Photographers, the beer vendors, the chip vendors. When they see you and you come back the next week, they come to you, they say, hola, señorita, can I help you again with something? And that's like me translating, but like that's very much them like coming to you and saying, I see you, I know you, you've been here before.
Hey,
welcome back.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
So you kick off the collection with this poem called On Becoming a Fan. Could you read it for us?
Yeah. Don't blame mask. Blame smoke. Blame the tricky sorcery of shiny boots, capes, and props. Blame spandex's tight gripped on Wessler's thighs. When swollen biceps of masked men slap canvas, how like broken toys their bodies become, each one proffering his limbs to the other. And we, their spectators, hooked under pain's smelly spell, cannot resist wanting sweat and blood. We rouse like tiny rioters, wave our fists, curse the winner. Blame the winning wrestler. How he radiates center stage, how he performs his own ascension up ropes, his thick arms hot and throbbing. Blame his left foot poised top turnbuckle. Blame his hand on waist pose, or the brain crowd, or the thud his legs make as he falls, hacking down on his opponent's waiting chest. Don't blame mask. Blame spicy pork rinds and their vendors. Blame bikini-clad women with Corona and Tecate splayed across their butts and chests. Can boys be blamed for imitating their fathers leaning in, praying his man clobbers the other guy? I blame a fourth-grade shoving match with my sister. My forehead turned hot by an early June sun. I hadn't understood how anger, like a hot spring, boils at the belly's core until his hostile vapor clenched my fist. I never tried to weigh muscle against meat, never had to throw a punch. I blame the thin hush an audience becomes as bone-tired men stumble into their musty dressing rooms, how their faces elude us each match. The windswept dirt under the feet of 10-year-old onlookers, they're cheering for my sister's grip. Blame the swirled marble buttons of our school uniforms and then possibly long wait for recess. Blame the purple blooming bruise sketched by the brushstroke of her hands. I have not thrown a punch since. I wish I had bright sparkling fabric hidden under my dress shirt. Blame the seams of a practice persona into which we've all neatly wrapped our arms. Blame the seamstress who sewed this mask and cut all the loose strings. This arena is a site for unveiling, my locale for loosening the strings.
My guest is Nandi Comer. Her latest collection is called Tapping Out. Wow. There's so much here of the visceral experience. Feels kind of warm in here, just listening to you read.
But thank you.
I absolutely love the way you drew the line between the match that you're watching in that poem and an early experience of a fight for you,
mm-hmm.
just kind of slugging it out with your sister.
It's really true. I really have not fought anyone. I've been very charismatic in getting out of a lot of fights, but she's the only person, and she's the only one that can lay claim to actually kicking my butt too, but She's my sister in the poem, but this is my god sister, Shashu Harris. We were born within a month of each other, and so we basically, like, had to be around each other all the time. So there were a lot of arguments and spats, and only once did we get physical where we actually, like, had to throw punches. And I think in similar ways, I think, like, these wrestlers, kind of underlining in that poem is, like, these wrestlers have a very much a sibling kind of love for one another. They oftentimes have fighting relationships where they are constantly in collaboration with one another. And if you see one fighter, you're definitely going to see the other one in the ring. And while it may look like a rival in the ring, they are caring for each other in ways that that are really delicate and very detailed because, you know, if one of them slips, they could really cause harm to the other. And so there's, like, this love competition happening between them.
Is there a way in which, considering violence in the structured form that we see it among luchadores, informs the extraordinarily unstructured way most of us experience it in our lives? Was there a different way of thinking about violence through seeing it in the ring?
I think my approach in a lot of my poems, and it spans my work for a long time. It's not just in Tapping Out, but because I'm not a violent person and I oftentimes have a really hard time getting physical, like bringing myself to physical kind of, whether it's defense, it's really quite difficult for me to understand the act. And so I think that, again, going back to inquiry that we were talking about, I think that one of the ways in which I have accessed poetry is to try to understand those acts, to understand acts of violence and understand the kind of harm that has not only been inflicted, like, within my family and my community on a national level. I'm thinking about how do we make these kinds of choices to not only inflict harm, but how do we endure it? How do we survive it?
Something that comes across in some of your other poems is that damage from violence is as much, if not more, psychological as physical.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like that's come up a few times in this collection as well.
Yeah. And also, how do we cope with that kind of violence when so many cases are violence that are being inflicted on people that we know? Usually they're people that we know. I am very much thinking about how do we survive trauma and within our own communities.
Nandi Comer, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tapping Out will be published on May 15th.